You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
We're talking about coffee today, coffee of all sorts, one type of coffee in particular. When you hear this, you'll be amazed about things that are done with coffee and the role it plays, not just for a stimulant, but just as a social function and in its place in restaurants and design. And it's really an interesting topic, and one that has not only culinary interests in the New Orleans area, but also a financial interest. With me is Sue Strachan, who's written about New Orleans culture, history, and current events for the Times-Picayune, the New Orleans Advocate, and New Orleans Magazine. Now she's moved on to being a freelance author, but is also an editor for a company called Benzinga, is that right?
Benzinga,
which is a business story supply company. So thank you, Sue, for joining us. All right, you've been on the track lately. LSU Press has been doing a series of books. It's called Iconic New Orleans Cocktails. And we did a story on this with the guy who wrote the book about a drink called the Vieux Carré. And we want to follow this series. But you did, this is a cocktail that you wrote about. But a lot of people want to think, that's not a cocktail. This is hot. And a lot of people think of cocktails as being chilled and icy and all this. But you wrote a book about Café Brûlot, or as you put it on the cover, the Café Brûlot. Is that the proper way? Anyway, if you see these books, these little books that LSU puts out, and they're really good, and they have a lot of information. And even if you don't like coffee, this is really interesting stuff here. So, hi, Sue.
Hello.
Okay. First of all, tell those who may not know or may have forgotten exactly what is Café Brûlot.
Well, I'll start with saying I don't like coffee. I don't drink coffee regularly, but I like this drink.
Yeah. So I saw that. I was reading your book, and you say, I don't like coffee. I said, well, what the hell? Go for it. Okay. Okay. But then you quickly qualify, but I do like Café Brûlot.
Yeah, and cappuccino. That's another story for another day. Okay. But Café Brûlot. Café Brûlot, what's in Café Brûlot is brandy, orange liqueur, or some use Kirschwasser, and then cloves, cinnamon, lemons, and oranges. And it's topped, lit on fire, and then it's topped by coffee, preferably a dark roast, or coffee and chicory.
Right. Now imagine this, if you're in a restaurant, and not every restaurant fixes this. I mean, hardly any of them fix it, but I think you pinpointed six, at least in the New Orleans area, that do. And I'm going to talk about those in a moment. But if you're in a restaurant that does Café Brûlot, they're not going to bring out something in a styrofoam cup. I mean, this is really quite a production.
Oh, no, no,
Tell us
no.
about a typical presentation of Café Brûlot.
So when you ask for Café Brûlot, you'll see a man bring out a rolling tray. There's a fancy name for it that I'm blanking on it right now, but it's okay. Garmanger or something.
Guerdon.
Thank you. Guerdon, thank you for having better memory than I.
That's from your book.
I know. I should know this. And so they bring out Guerdon, which is like a rolling tray with it, like a hot plate on top. And you'll have this very special bowl that was created by Jules Alcitor back in the late 19th century. It's a stand. And stand can be just a regular stand, but some stands have like a devil on the arms that hold up the copper bowl in which the Brûlot mixture is either pre-made or made in front of you. And that can be, they'll put in the brandy, the orange liqueur, the cloves, and I forgot earlier the ingredients, sugar. Some put orange peels in, some put lemon peels in. You have to put cloves in. But then you also have people such as Arnaud's, or restaurants such as Arnaud's, that will create a spiral from the skin of an orange and stud it with cloves, and then they'll pour the mixture over the cloves that's on fire.
Okay, so the key ingredients, as I get this, beyond the coffee, okay, are cloves. Big impact on orange. It's some kind of orange liqueur that you put in there.
Yeah, so it's an orange liqueur. It can be Curaçao, Cointreau, or like, some of the restaurants gave me triple sec. I'm not a fan of triple sec, but it burns off, so that's fine. You're not drinking shots of it, so you'll be okay. But I tried it with Kishwasher. I'll say, I wrote the book during the pandemic, and Antoine's was very generous. One of the places, Antoine's, an old school New Orleans restaurant, was very nice to let me come by one day during the pandemic and test taste a bunch of different ways of doing the Cafe Brûlée. And I said, well, I saw someone make it with Kirschwasser, which is a cherry liqueur. Can we try it that way? And they had some, not a lot of places have it, and I actually prefer the cherry liqueur to the orange liqueur.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'll take it with the orange liqueur, don't get me wrong, sure. But like, it was an interesting sort of taste test.
I never realized how many different orange liqueurs there are.
There are.
I mean, orange seems to be the go-to fruit or whatever it is. I guess for a lot of mixology.
Yes, it is. And then it's orange on orange because you have the orange liqueur in it if you're using the orange liqueur. And then you have the orange, you know, slices or peels, not the slices, you don't put the pulp in the drink, just the skins of the lemons and the skins of the orange into the mixture. And then I said some of the people also do the, particularly Arnaud's, does the spiral, because they do a spiral from the skin and they cut it down, but they keep it attached to the orange, and then they stud it with cloves, like every 1 inch or so, and then they rewrap it, and then they've lit the Brûlée mixture on fire, and they'll take the fork with the orange and they'll raise it above the drink and they'll pour the flaming mixture down the drink. And what happens there is that the flames ignite or heat up the orange skin, where you're supposed to get the orange flavor from the skin dripping down from the flames. And then you also have the cloves also, sparks. You'll see sparks from them, same sort of thing. It's supposed to come down the spiral.
So you have this peeled orange skin.
Yeah.
And the waiter hangs it up above the coffee.
Yeah.
Now the coffee's in the cup by this time.
No. Oh, it's all still in the bowl. It hasn't been poured yet.
Oh, it's all still in the bowl.
It's
hanging over the bowl then at that point.
Hanging over the bowl.
Okay.
Yes.
And then they set fire to this peel off thing, which by the way, other customers in the restaurant say, what's going on here, you know? But all of a sudden you see a fire, okay? And then dripping down then into the bowl is a mixture of the orange essence or?
Orange essence, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And clove essence.
And the impact of orange and clove essence falling into that and then falls into the bowl right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not pouring. It's like you're not going to see a pouring down of like or it's more of like you just know what's happening.
Yeah. And it's part theatric, too.
It's part of the theatrics of it.
Yeah.
So it makes it a favorite drink for dessert for people in New Orleans.
So for those who are wondering, what does Cafe Brûlée mean? Brûlée means burnt. Okay.
Burnt.
Now, anybody can burn their coffee. I don't need to do all that.
No, that's true. Well, so when LC Press asked me to write the book, you start doing research, and a lot of the early research directed me to being something that Jean Lafitte was making, which I had a good chuckle of Jean Lafitte making Cafe Brûlée in the swamps of New Orleans at that time. And then the other one was that it was created during Prohibition to mask the flavor of alcohol, which I don't doubt, but they weren't doing the demonstration, obviously, in the dining room, because you need the alcohol for the flames. So, and neither kind of worked out. So I did a little bit more digging, and it turns out that the origin of that Brûlée mixture, the brandy with the fruit, the cloves, and the sugar, that is originally from the south of France, from the Armagnac region. I mean, an Armagnac is a brandy. And so I contacted the people over in France, the Armagnac representatives, who said, yes, we do this thing in late fall after the first distillation, and all the distillers have a party and they do their own Brûlée mixtures. Now, if you want to do a line, I'm sure you know this, that most of these old wine restaurants in New Orleans, founders are from that region, that southwest region of France. Granted, transportation is vastly different than it is now, but for example, Antoine Alcitour, who founded Antoine's, and his son Jules trained in Paris. So, there's a mixture, everyone's still traveling anyway, so you're getting a mixture of cultures. So there's a good chance that Jules saw this, or Antoine saw this in when they were growing up in south of France. Jean Galatois, also from that part of the region of France as well. So you have all these people from that area who've probably seen it.
In the region is Armagnac?
So Armagnac is grown in Gascony, which is in southwest France.
Okay.
A lot of these old wine restaurant founders came from that region, which is sort of an interesting sort of line, bringing it to New Orleans. Now, that's just the Brulot mixture. The coffee bean top of
Let's explain that there's this thing called Brulot, which isn't necessarily coffee, but there's a thing called Brulot, which is sort of like a burnt down or of mixture of some sort of fruit.
Brandy, it's brandy. The base is always brandy. It's Armagnac. It can be cognac. It can be, you know, any brandy. But in this story, it started with Armagnac, where the Armagnac producers in that area where they produce Armagnac, which is in Gascony in southwest France. And so they would have parties, and they would put cloves, lemons, you know, all the ingredients that you'll see in the Brulot mixture that you have in New Orleans, and light it on fire. And they would have the guests, you know, stir it up and serve it to people. And it was, you know, sort of an honor to be asked to do that. So I'm assuming that, you know, they brought that over to New Orleans. And then who knows when the coffee started. We think it's Jules Alcyator was the one who came up with the idea of adding the coffee to it. But no, there's no direct line. As you know, a lot of times in New Orleans foods and any sort of food, the origin story has a direct line, and then it kind of goes, you know, poof. You kind of have to make conjectures about.
Yeah, it goes in a lot of different directions, and different people claim for it. Now, by the way, Jean Lafitte is one of the most complicated characters in history to follow. Okay, mm-hmm. You can find anything in he did spend time in France. This is a quick aside. One of my favorite Jean Lafitte rumors, and it's probably not true, but I hope it is, because I think it's just really interesting, is that Jean Lafitte, as an older man living in France, knew Karl Marx. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, Karl Marx had been a young guy. Jean Lafitte would have been an old guy. And they met like at some cafe in Paris. Perhaps it's Boulot. No,
probably.
Okay. And the other part of the story, though, is that Lafitte had amassed a lot of money and gave Marx some to finance the Russian Revolution.
Wow, where'd you find that?
That's wild.
That's wild.
It could have been money he raised from Café Brulot. So anyway, the serving of Café Brulot, this isn't something that you go and pour into a mug or anything.
No, not even a styrofoam cup. That's heresy. Oh, no. I think I just like that sugar's getting out of his mind. So the other thing that Jules Alcyator, Jules Alcyator was the son of Antoine Alcyator, who founded Antoine's old line restaurant in for the French Quarter. It's still in existence, and they still serve Café Brulot. And so Jules, at that time, I think was probably one of the great unsung marketers and entrepreneurs and culinary creators of New Orleans. He invented egg sardine, for example.
Now Jules, we just got on the family tree again. Yeah. Jules would be whose son?
Antoine was started by Antoine Alcyator.
Okay.
Then Jules Alcyator is his son. So Jules took it over in the late 19th century, and he was the one who, I think, really elevated and created, you know, some of the recipes that you see today, i.e. egg sardou and everything else, to distinguish himself from all the other restaurants in town. Now, Galatoire's hasn't been founded yet. Neither are nerds. But at that time, there were, I'm sure, a ton of other, you know, old line restaurants that he was competing with. So he came up with this idea. I think, you know, he's constantly coming up with ideas. He probably tasted Brulot somewhere, you know, maybe his dad made it, you know, maybe he had it when he was training in France. And who knows, he came up with the idea of doing this flaming drink and stomping out and cooling it down with, not necessarily cooling it down because it's still a hot drink, but doing the coffee, making it a coffee drink, making it an after dinner drink. Though you can drink it anytime of the meal, but like it's everyone drinks it as a dessert or part of dessert.
It's a pretty heavy drink, and so it's not it's not what you want for an appetizer or anything. You want this at the end.
But you know, there's those crazy people who go to restaurants and just eat dessert. So like they're not crazy, but you know what I mean. Like people just want to have their dessert and they'll have the Café Brulot with it. So I think he came up with this idea. And he's like, well, how do I promote it? And at that time, you see a lot of advertising having these very stylized devils. So I think he created this idea. Again, this is all conjecture, that he came up with, like, let's make it Café Brulot, and then let's call it Café Brulot Diabolique, devilishly burnt coffee. And so he had these cups designed that were based on demi-tasse glass. And he had these devils, stylized devils on the side, subsets have the devil also on the saucer.
It's like an illustration of a devil.
Illustration of a devil.
Yeah.
And then he also created those bowls in which to make and serve it. And some of the bowls you'll see will have the stylized devil as the stands for the bowl that hold the bowl up. Mm-hmm. So he created, you know, two specific things to make and serve the drink in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you can just get any old spoon and just spoon it in there?
Well, no, good question. So you need to get a specific ladle too. The ladle has to have a strain. It's better to have not like a soup ladle. I mean, in theory, you can use any sort of ladle, but the best ladle to use is one that has, it's oblong and either end or both has a strainer, because when you're getting the coffee to put into the drink, you want it so the fluid is directed into that smaller cup, but you also want something to keep the cloves and cinnamon sticks and lemons and oranges from going into the drink as well.
Hmm. It's kind of a picturesque sort of setting.
It's a show. I mean, people love seeing it. What attracted me when they asked me to do this book and they gave me a list of New Orleans cocktails to do, what attracted me to Cafe Brulot is that it's such a show. It's like people go to see the fire, this show. It's a great way. Anytime I'm from out of town, I bring them to an old line restaurant, I ask for the Cafe Brulot because I know I'm going to get the fire, the show. And even if you don't like coffee, you'll still like it. You'll have a few sips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you go to Antoine's and you order Cafe Brulot and the Baked Alaska, you need to have an extinguisher on the side.
That's true.
Yeah, you have two fiery dishes right there. The coffee and chicory, okay. Chicory is something we're told to is unique to New Orleans. Your book points out there are other places that historically had it. But what does chicory do? Why do we have chicory in our coffee in New Orleans?
Well, it originally started, people say it came during the Civil War when there was a lack of coffee in the city. But doing some research and talking to some other, a coffee roaster in town, Kevin Bidou of CR Coast Roast, he was said to me, and we talked about it, and he's like, well, actually, the French were already drinking coffee and chicory together, because back during the Napoleonic Wars in France, they did have a shortage of coffee. So they started drinking coffee and chicory, people got accustomed to the taste, they come, to New Orleans, they still are accustomed to the taste. So they start making, they had the coffee, but they had the coffee and chicory because that's the taste that they like.
It's an extender, isn't it?
It's an extender, but, it's an extender. But the other thing that people don't know about chicory, it doesn't have any caffeine. So you're getting less caffeine.
Uh-huh. And for some people, it's good.
And some people, that is good. Yeah. And it adds a nice kick to it. I actually, again, talking about preferences, is that, the coffee you serve with Cafe Brulot has to be as strong. So you have to have a French dark roast or coffee and chicory, because even though, as you said, the extender also manages to hold the flavor of the brulot. It's not, doesn't, you know, it's, you don't want a too alcoholy tasting drink with coffee, but this nice has, the chicory adds a nice kick to it, and I would prefer that.
So what would you do if you were making, would you use the French dark roast?
Coffee and chicory. Totally coffee.
But what exactly is chicory?
It's a type of weed. I shouldn't say that. It's not a weed. It's an herb. Sorry. You can get it in Nebraska. I think they source it from Nebraska right now. In Egypt, they source it back to Egypt. They're using it in dishes and using it as something on top of your meals.
It's a root of some sort of plant. I guess there's a plant called a chicory plant. It's a root of the chicory plant. And it probably has no other useful purpose other than to make coffee and chicory, I would think.
It was used originally and used medicinally. But that's like most, you look at liqueurs and most of them start off medicinally.
Yeah. Now, of course, in the ingredients key are oranges and lemons, and you say they got to be fresh. Mm-hmm. And that you can slice it into thin skin layers and no soft spots. You got to get the real thing. Tell us about cloves.
Cloves are essential to it. Actually, I'm not going to say what restaurant, that I had the Cafe Brulot and the waiter forgot to add the cloves. And so,
oh my God.
Yeah. And so you would think cloves, okay. You know how sometimes you make recipes, you're like, yeah, I can, I don't have to have that in there. And sometimes it's fine. But cloves are so essential to it, because when we got the Cafe Brulot, it was, I would say, not good without the cloves. You have to have the cloves. So So the cloves add that kind of nice spice kick to it. Again, cloves are also medicinal as well. So yeah.
So they can make you feel better.
It makes you feel better. The feel good drink. Errol, yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. And according to this book in front of me, cloves are the dried, unopened flower buds of the clove tree, the tropical evergreen known as something in Latin. It's a native of Indonesia, but can also be found in India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and other places. You're right, it does give a kick. I mean, if you didn't have cloves in there, you wouldn't have it, okay? Cinnamon.
Cinnamon, another, now I have not had it without cinnamon, so I can't say, but I think it is too, because you do actually taste, to me, at least in my opinion, you do taste a little bit of the cinnamon, and that, again, is another medicinal element to it, medicinal.
Yeah, I mean, cinnamon has a nice flavor. I mean,
nice
people
flavor
like,
to it.
Yeah, people, I mean, the essence of cinnamon and anything kind of.
It's the rolled bark of the, I forget what time. You have the book of it, so yeah. I don't forget what the tree is.
Cinnamon comes from Indonesia. I mean, Indonesia is, let's see, cinnamon is made out of the inner layer of bark from several tree types from the genus cinnamon. So anyway, it's the bark from the cinnamon tree. Okay. Sugar, everybody knows what that is, but it is the white granulated sugar. So it's not...
You can use sugar cubes, too. Yeah. I know Brennan's, they don't make it anymore, but in their recipes, they say use a sugar cube.
Yeah. But don't put out these little yellow packs or anything like that.
No. You don't want the Splenda or the Sweet and Low.
Okay. Now we're getting to the really serious area here. The liquor and liquors.
Uh-oh. Okay. Liquor and liquors.
Okay. Well, first of all, cognac and brandy. What's the difference between cognac and brandy?
Armagnac is the older of the two. And I'm actually going to have to look that up. I'm going to be really honest with you.
Page 36.
36, okay. 36. Well, I'm going to read it because it's called The Liquor of the Gods. And it was by French author Victor Hugo. And so it's about region stuff. So cognac has been produced in the cognac region. That sounds just like champagne. You can't call it champagne unless it's champagne. But again, it's also made in southwest France as well. And Armagnac is also, is in Armagnac or in Gascony. And that's the brandy, or you can use any brandy.
Okay. And then there's also, the trio of orange liqueurs, Curacao, Triple Sec, and Grand Marnier. And so those are pretty much what they're going to if you need for you onto the car.
Yeah. And also Cointreau if you want to use that as
Cointreau,
well.
Cointreau, yeah.
I prefer Grand Marnier. It's more expensive of the liqueurs to put in. I'm not a fan. So again, fun with local restaurants. Galatois Melvin Rodrigue, I went to interview him for the book. And I said, you know what, since I'm here, can I taste test the orange liqueurs? So they had Curacao, Triple Sec, and Grand Marnier. They didn't have Cointreau at the time. And again, this is just shots, just sipping it. And then Triple Sec's disgusting. I can't even have it in margaritas anymore. Like someone tried to convince me once that there are good Triple Secs. I still yet to be convinced. Curacao wasn't too bad. Grand Marnier you can sip on and adds a nice smooth flavor. And Cointreau, I've not actually tasted yet, but Cointreau is kind of on the level with Grand Marnier.
So Curacao is it's an island in the Caribbean. Yes. What the Spanish came to in the 1500s.
Mm-hmm. And they brought these oranges from Valencia, and they thought, oh, we'll grow oranges here. But they really didn't grow the oranges the way that they do in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
For obvious reasons, it's not Spain. But the fruit became bitter. So some industries, they like, well, what can we do with this? And they came up with this, the orange liqueur.
And they named it after the island.
Yeah.
Of Curacao. There are some islands in the Caribbean that are far enough south that they're out of the way of the hurricane belt.
Mm-hmm.
And so when hurricanes come across the Atlantic, they go north of them. And so I think Curacao is one of them.
Curacao is one of them, and then St. Lucia is one of them, too. There's that little thing, like, they do occasionally get hit, but it's kind of interesting that those are the islands that don't get hit.
Okay. And so, but in all cases, you go with Grand Marnier.
I go Grand Marnier.
Yeah. Let's talk about the places where you'd most likely find it. By the way, there's somebody you quote that describes Café Brûlée as like a liquid fruitcake. Is that a
That sounds like you had it with Kirschwasser. No, it doesn't taste like a fruit quite flavor. Kirschwasser. But yeah, everyone has their own experiences with it.
You talk about, I'm going to get to the rest in a second, but you mentioned a lot of interesting characters in this. Mm-hmm. Well, the little French guys who came over here for various reasons.
Mm-hmm. Dominic Yeo, who is a pirate, who's Jean Lafitte's, you know.
Tell us about Count Arnaud, and what kind of count was he? Was he a no count?
Count Arnaud, who was the founder, he founded Arnaud's, that is still run in the French Quarter. It's still open. You can still get Café Brûlée there. And he is he decided he was a count. And he came from France, moved to the U.S., worked his way through the industry, and opened Arnaud's restaurant and became the count. And he was interesting because
the king didn't say, "Okay, you're a count."
No, he was a count. He decided he was a count.
He just said he was a count.
He was a count. And okay.
So you could say you're a duchess.
I could be a duchess. I may actually be a duchess. You never know. But he's interesting because he sounds like he was quite the character because. There's a story about how he went to, I think it was Owen Brennan, and was like, "Oh yeah, like you can open a restaurant." And Owen Brennan was okay, game on, and opened Brennan's. So
It wasn't that he told Brennan that an Irishman could never open a French restaurant.
Yep. That was what the count said, and as I said, Owen was game on. And voila, now we have Brennan's. Now, Brennan's another, they gave me recipes for Brûlée, but they don't make it anymore. And I never got a reason why, but they very generously gave me their Brûlée recipe. So if you, any of the old.
So Brennan's doesn't make Café Brûlée.
They don't. Oh. But they do flaming desserts. So I don't know, maybe they don't have the Gardon set up in the way, but they quit like the bowl set up that they need.
Well, I hate that when you run out of Gardons.
I know. You never know. You run out of Gardons, you don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah. Jules Galatois?
Jules Galatois? No, Jean Galatois.
Jean Galatois, yeah.
It's all the J's. Jean Galatois, he came here from the Gascony region of France, and he started Galatois in 1904 or 5, and he's another one that he started serving, Café Brûlée, and you can get it there as well.
Right. And then we'll talk about the places, according to your book, that serve it. Places to sample Café Brûlée, Antoine's, mm-hmm. Arnaud's, Brennan's, Broussard's, Commander's Palace, and Galatois. Who was the commander?
Oh boy, you're asking me. I'm going to have to cheat on this one. That's and look fine. At my book.
Yeah.
But I just want, you said, like I said that Brennan's is not, they gave me recipes, but they don't serve it. But let me get to my commander's.
Okay. I think he was just a staff guy named Commander. I mean, I don't think he was one of these guys.
Maybe he's a self-proclaimed commander. Okay. All right. And then, just something I just picked up in the book is that the blue side, the turquoise on the side of Commander's Palace is called Commander's Blue.
Yeah,
okay. It wasn't a commander. It started as a saloon in 1893 by Emile Commander. So he wasn't a commander, but he was a commander. And then in the 20s, Frank Giartano purchased it, followed by Eleanor and Frank Moran. And then the Brennan family bought it in 1969. It's still in their family.
Yeah, I knew a lady who grew up, she was an elderly lady now, but she grew up in the around that area in the Gordon District. And Commander's was there. But back then, like, Commander's was like the neighborhood restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, every Friday, they got the family, where are we going to Commander's Palace? Like, oh, no, not Commander's Palace again, okay? Because they're there. And then all of a sudden, then came all the changes. It became one of the really, it's really one of the most popular restaurants in the country. Because I know we used to do the surveys and the magazines and all that. It really is. You also go a little bit into some of the food related to this kind of food, okay? I mean, it's not, you don't have
to have the flaming stuff, the flaming food and drink.
Right now. What?
The flaming food and drinks chapter?
Well, the Bananas Foster, that was invented at Brennan's, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And it was named after
the commissioner or something that they were entertaining at that time.
But he was also the guy, I think it was the same guy, who had the company that made the drapes and thing, like we call it like the carnival balls, the thing they have on the floor, the in that they make shades, wood, and all of that.
Is it Fabric?
No.
I got it.
Awnings.
Awnings. Okay.
Yeah. He was the awnings guy.
Yeah.
And somehow he knew him, and then they got to talk. That's the story where the name came from. The actual recipe, I don't know. Tom Fitzmaurice told me one time that he was talking to one of the Brennan's people, and he said, like, Owen just got it out of a magazine. That was a magazine about doing something with bananas and ice cream. And he embellished it, you know. But I don't know if it's
true. There's two competing stories with it, and I give both of them in there. One was it was created in 1951. They do know that, and that the dessert was named after Richard Foster, the chairman of the New Orleans Crime Commission. The one version is Owen Brennan challenged his chef Paul Blanger to create a dish featuring the fruit bananas that had been brought by Owen's brother John, who ran a produce business. There's an excess of bananas, and I guess John bought them and said, let's do something with this. And then the other one is from, I got from Miss Ella of Commander's Palace book, memoir by the late restaurateur Ella Brennan, Owen's sister. And she said that she recalled a dish that their mother would make for breakfast, which was sauteing bananas and cinnamon and other brown sugar and butter for breakfast. And so she also said she worked with Paul Blanger too, and they created the dish. Either or could be. It just depends, you know. As I said, I put it in. Brennan's has the version, the first version. Ms. Ellis has the second version. Ella was working there at the time. Somewhere in between is the truth.
Yeah. With a lot of these dishes, it's a version that was started somewhere and then it was embellished in other places. In New Orleans, did a lot of embellishing.
Yeah.
Probably more so. And the same thing is probably true with Baked Alaska, where Ella Brennan did a lot of that. You know, the part is that
Baked Alaska is a tricky story.
And you describe it as being a celebratory dessert. That's true. I've been to events there where all of a sudden they come in, they turn off the lights, and they come in with the flaming Baked Alaskas. I heard another thing that became a real impetus for Baked Alaska was cruise ships. That when they had
I didn't hear that.
Like when they had the big dinners that, maybe 200 people in there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they turn off the lights and then they have this music and the waiters walk around. And they're carrying these trays with these fire in them with the Baked Alaska.
It's very 19th century if you think about it. Because the old line restaurants they still wear the black suits and the bow ties, and they still harken to that 19th century look. So you kind of feel like you're stepping back in time. So okay. I think that's another thing the cruise ship people really like. If you're coming into New Orleans, you really get a real dose of old New Orleans when you do that.
Okay, let's think about two more desserts.
All right.
Crepe Suzette.
I love Crepe Suzette. Oh my God. I get that at Brennan's all the time.
Okay.
That has Grand Marnier in it too.
Okay. So it's one of these formal presentation things. But
then we were using the Gardon again.
Okay.
Gardon.
Yeah, that.
So the dessert is crepes made with Beurre Suzette, which is a sauce of sugar, butter, orange juice, and Grand Marnier or another orange liqueur, ladled on top and lit on fire. So, and that again is a presentation. And I said also in the book that there are also two different claims on how that was started.
Okay. And then the other is Cherry Jubilee.
Cherry Jubilee is fun too. I haven't had that in a while. I don't even see that on menus anymore.
I mean, it's good.
I know it's good. And they use Kirschwasser in that. So that was generally credited to Georges Auguste Escoffier.
Who's like one of the famous chefs in history.
Yes. Who prepared the dish for Queen Victoria, who loved cherries, for her Jubilee celebration in 1887. But the original version did not have ice cream on it. And I think ice cream was what possibly actually makes
it. Here he was, one of the famous chefs in history. He didn't even think to put ice cream in it. You know?
I know. And see, someone added something to it, and that's what people know it as. It's sort of like Café Brûlée. It started as just strictly a brandy mixture that you lit on fire, and then someone said, like, let's put coffee on it.
Okay. All right. So what if you got locked into a kitchen by somebody and say, Sue, make your definitive Café Brûlot. You didn't know this from place to place. Café Brûlot is essentially the same drink, but it's like a bread pudding. There are variations of it from place to place.
Everybody
had their own little twist on doing the different or gumbo. So what would the Sue Strachan Café Brûlot be?
I want to say if the recipes in the book from all the online restaurants there are subtle. Like, I was really worried at one point, like, oh, I'm going to get the same recipe from six different restaurants. But in actuality, there are all little subtle differences to it, which made it fun. And actually, the Broussard's recipe is a good one if you want to like make large quantities of it for a party. Back to what your question is. So I would have the person use, I have no opinion about the brand he used at all. I did have it with cognac, I had it with Armagnac, I had regular brandy. That to me is a base. I think what matters to me more is having it with the Kiswassa versus the orange liqueur. And again, the Kiswassa is the cherry brandy. But if someone's like, I don't have Kiswassa, I'll do the Grand Marnier. And then, cloves, fresh cloves, the cloves, in grocery stores, not a lot of sugar. I've seen a lot of places sit there and start pouring the sugar in, and then it just tastes like coffee, like sugar, a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
And you lose any sort of subtlety of the cloves, the cinnamons, anything else, that you totally lose that with too much sugar. So be on the lookout when they start putting the sugar in. So not a lot of sugar. And then chicory, coffee and chicory. And that would be my perfect one. Now, I wouldn't make it, but what's been fun about this book was when people started, it debuted in September 2021. So I did a lot of stuff in the fall and Christmas promoting it. And when people started buying it for Christmas gifts, I started getting messages and stuff and texts of people making Café Brûlot at home for Christmas. And so what I started finding out, which is really interesting, a lot of families make Café Brûlot during Christmas. It's a tradition. So I started getting photos of generally it's the father or the son or the grandfather of the family making the drink. Though, a funny story was...
The father wants to do it just so they can set the fire.
I know, exactly.
It's a man thing.
But I doubt she made it. So in my research, I did find that it was something back in the mid-20th century that ladies who lunch liked to make at their luncheons. And then Longview House and Gardens, this is, of course, after the book. You always get these things after you publish the book. But Longview, my friend over at Longview House and Gardens sent me this image of Edith Stern from Life magazine, and she has her Café Brûlot cups and set in front of her, saying that's her favorite drink to make and consume. So...
Well, that's pretty high cotton there. Yeah.
So at some point, women were making it, but generally now it's something for the men to do.
Well, the Sterns used to like to play a lot of tennis. They had their own tennis court.
Yeah.
So they could drink all the coffee they wanted to, and they go play tennis for an hour or so.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's like a stimulant, and you're happy. You're happy and a stimulant while you're doing it.
Would you get a dessert with it?
I've had it with baked Alaska before, and I like it, but it's like. It's just so heavy. It's almost like you would go in and just, I would go in and just get baked Alaska and Café Brûlot together.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, you've already had like an appetizer, an entree, and you're full. And, baked Alaska is amazing. But it's a rich dessert.
Yeah.
And they can't say
give me a scoop of it. I mean, they come in big slices.
The big slices. They give you, now... What I just saw, and I don't know how long they've been doing this, but I found that Antoine's is now doing individual baked Alaskas. Yeah. Now that I would do. I'm revising my answer. Yes, I would order it together if I could get an individually sliced baked Alaska. But I don't know. But I just learned about it the other day, so I don't know if you get the same sort of flaming thing with the baked Alaska that you do with the larger baked Alaska. Which for some people who haven't seen it, it's a domed. Dessert that's got like about a foot long, about 5 inches, but it's big, and it's ice cream covered by meringue, which is lit on fire. It's ice cream, then cake. It's kind of a white spongy cake, but not sponge cake, but a white cake, and then meringue over it, and it's lit on fire, and then you can have chocolate sauce on it if you want, a caramel sauce on it if you want.
You can get an inscription on the side, "Happy Birthday, Sue."
Yeah,
Which only works one day a year. But anyway,
yes, So yeah, you don't get that obviously the individual one, but like for, you know, for any sort of party, yes, I totally recommend getting the baked Alaska.
Yeah.
Save some room in your stomach if you can.
Does Los Angeles make you, and it did for me when I was reading it, appreciate these old New Orleans restaurants?
Totally. I mean, and during the pandemic, you know, I learned, you know, was appreciating them more because, you know, in particular Antoine's, they were trying to keep people there and keep them employed. And, you know, I was there not when there was a lot of, there was no one there actually. I mean, obviously they were doing COVID protocols at the time. So I was able to wander around, you know, freely and look at all, go in all the rooms and look at the pictures on the walls. And, you know, same thing with Antoine's, you know, I mean, Arnaud's, you know, on all those old line restaurants, there's just such this great history to it. And it's a sort of, I wouldn't say familiarity in a bad way, but familiarity in a way that, yes, you know what you're going to get, but it's like going home and there's, it's pomp, it's circumstance, it's a show. You've got the waiter, you know, Galatoire's, and you have the waiter that's been in the family for, you know, or been part of the family for, you know, two generations. I don't think they do the tabs anymore. Years and years and years ago, I used to go with a friend who would just sign off. You would leave without even like looking at the bill. He went on the house account. I don't think they do house accounts anymore. You know, Bruce Arts has such a great history. I think they just celebrated their 100th anniversary about a year or two ago. And they're all in the French Quarter, except obviously for Commander's Palace. But that, you know, that building is from the 19th century, and it's that beautiful turquoise, aka Commander's Blue. So.
Now, some of these restaurants have been pretty much in the same family. I mean, the name may have changed, but the Antoine's.
Antoine's the same family. I always thought I was fifth generation, but I went and looked really quickly before we take this, and it's Rick Blunt is seventh generation owner of it. And then Galatoire's was up in the family up until, you know, a couple of years ago. And then John George's and some people and partners bought it. And then Arnaud's. It's only had two owners. It was, you know, the Casnay family sold it to Archie Kasbarian, and Archie Kasbarian's children runs it. Brennan's still in the family. Let me see if I missed anyone. Commander's is the fourth.
It's like a split in the Brennan's family.
Yeah, there's a split in the Brennan's family, but that's how the Brennan's family has owned it. They bought it because of the split. They bought it, and it's been in that family, Bobby Ella Brennan and siblings. And it's Lally and Cousins Lally and T. Martin. Yeah, you do it. Yeah.
Now, Bruce Arts has had a good bit of turnover over the year with this.
Bruce Arts has and is owned by Creole Concept Group. And so.
And that Creole Concept Group does a good job. I mean,
they really do. Yeah.
And, I think what would Jules's time period have been roughly?
1877 is when he took over from his dad. 1880s, 1890s. You know, that's a good question. I wonder if there's overlap between him and Jean Galatoire. There might have been.
Yeah, okay. I think it's Jules, okay.
Yeah.
Somewhere, if you're Antoine's, there's a lot of framed things on the walls. Right? And there's this framed magazine article. From a magazine that no longer exists, but there was a food magazine, and they had a contest way back when about what to name like the short item of food served before an entree. They were using the word hors d'oeuvres, and a lot of people kind of stumbled over the word hors d'oeuvres, didn't know how to spell it, anything like that. And anyway, they wanted another name for hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah.
And he had his contest, and according to this, I think it was Jules, who sent in the winning name, okay?
Yeah.
And he called it an appetite pleaser. Okay.
I told you Jules was like, you know, the marketing hero of the time.
And so from appetite pleaser, they just kind of, you know, joined it together.
Appetizer.
Now, you'd think the French restaurant would have kept the name hors d'oeuvre, okay?
Yeah.
Instead of doing a contrived American name, but
I have to look that up. That's interesting. I could see Jules being the one doing that. As I said, he was always, kept on thinking of ideas and whatnot. Go ahead. No, I was going to say also like some two. I wanted to bring up two quintessentially New Orleans stories. One actually I found doing research from St. Charles Avenue magazine, which is part of Renaissance Publishing, from how they used to, during like the mid-20th century, used to serve Cafe Brulo at the Sugar Bowl party the night before at Antoine. So you have, they showed me some really funny pictures of Bear Bryant making Cafe, you know, making, I'm going to do that in quote marks, Cafe Brulo, which was kind of, which was really funny. And then the quintessential New Orleans story is when President Roosevelt came to Antoine's to visit, and Robert Maestri was the mayor, and he uttered his, you know, when Roosevelt asked him, I mean, Maestri said to, Roosevelt, how do you like dim oysters?
Yeah.
And so, when he brought a photograph, I thought of that.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the
photograph. That's a great photo. That's famous. Well, you know, the point of that story is Roosevelt, who was this, you know, East Coast, very sophisticated man, he came into New Orleans to dedicate some things. And there was concern. I mean, Maestri was kind of like a gruff guy, you know, from the, I think, the Ninth Ward or something. They were concerned how the two would gel.
Yeah.
And they were sitting together at the restaurant, and then they got a picture of him sitting there.
Yeah.
And they get the oysters, and yeah, Maestri turns to him and says, I like the oysters. And all his staff is kind of frank.
Okay. Yeah, see in the photo, you see Roy in the background going, oh, no.
Yeah. That's a great picture. Yeah. You know, they still have the Antoine's, the tableware.
Oh, yeah.
That day, okay. And so they, we only use it for very, very, very special occasions. The problem was is that it's so old and dainty that you have to wash it all by hand.
Yeah.
Because every time you use it, you know, it's a big job, and so you can't just be running a dishwasher.
No, you can't.
Also, way in the back of Antoine, if you go all the way to the back where they have like the rooms, like the Rex room, and the Proteus room, and the Escargot room, there's a little room across from the Escargot room. It's painted a bright red, and it's got a table. But it was in that room where like something like 54 years ago, New Orleans Magazine was founded.
Oh, I knew the room you're talking about. Yeah, but I don't even know what that called. Yeah. It's called. I know what you're talking about.
And they brought in some guys from Atlanta Magazine.
Yeah.
And the guy who started it for some publishers in New Orleans wrote about that night.
Yeah.
And he said it was over, it was a rainy night, and he said they flew in, they went to Antoine's, and he said in like over dinner, a new magazine was founded that night. You know? And so when the New Orleans Magazine had its 50th anniversary, we put up a plaque. Anyway, well, this is really a fascinating exploration here. Do you have another book in the works?
I might have a book in the works. I've been sort of sitting down trying. The problem is I have too many ideas in my head and I need to focus. Some people asked me if I was going to do another of the cocktail books. And I don't know. The list is interesting about other New Orleans cocktails. And having put one underneath my, you know, under my belt, they're hard to do. I mean, there's a lot of research. I mean, if I hadn't, you know, found the source of, you know, from someone just talking to people about Armagnac, I would have written a book saying like, well, we think it was found, you know, it was created by Jean Lafitte. When in reality it was, you know, the Brulo was created in Paris, France. I think the one cocktail that is intriguing, but I don't know if I can do 14,000 words of it for it, is the Grasshopper, which from what I understand was invented at Two Jacks. So, and that's like the green liqueur, creme de menthe drink, but no one really drinks it. And the thing about Cafe Brulo, which is fun because it has such a history in New Orleans, and people, you know, as I said, people were sending me videos and photos of them making it at home.
Yeah.
You don't quite have that with the Grasshopper, but it's still worthy of a book. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I, you know, the first book of the series was the Sazerac. Mine was second. The next was the Via Carrée. And the most latest one is the Absinthe Frappe, which I finally had my first absinthe drink, believe it or not, a few weeks ago when that book made its debut. Mm-hmm. And it was actually very yummy.
What's your favorite New Orleans cocktail, regardless of books or anything like that?
I drink vodka on the rocks with lemon. I don't think you call that a cocktail. But I would say, I think for dessert, Cafe Brulo for sure. I haven't had a Vieux Carré. But if I do it between Absinthe Frappe and a Sazerac, I would say Sazerac, but it depends who's making it too, because there's so many different ways of making a Sazerac. Yeah. Maybe Sazerac at the Sazerac bar. But there was recently an article my friend Andrew Nelson did in the Wall Street Journal where he went to a bunch of different other places to try Sazeracs, and I was with them at Clancy's, and Garth, who's the main bartender there, made us a Sazerac, which was quite tasty. So.
Now, we know from previous interviews that Kelly's is French 75, right? Even though it's not really a New Orleans thing, I don't think it is.
Ooh, that's nice. So you have it with gin or cognac?
Gin.
Okay. Never, no. No cognac. You can have that cognac, yeah.
You can, but you shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, and I'll end this. So Lafcadio Hearn, he was a journalist in the late 19th century, wrote a book about Creole food, and he included the burro in there, but there was no coffee with it. What he liked to end it with was one of the things was champagne or wine, which I thought was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of a Chef Sazerac guy. And then,
I know, I remember. You were a Sazerac.
You know, an old fashioned isn't too far away from a Sazerac.
And
on the right occasion, I find myself kind of leaning towards an old fashioned. I'm simple. I like the fruit at the bottom of the glass. No.
See, that's the old. So that's like the 20th century old fashions. The old fashioned where it's like, if you're trying to be a cocktail purist, is you don't have the mulled cherries at the bottom of fruit. And I'm like, no, give me my. You know, and a lot of people like to use Luxardo cherries, which is the fancy dark cherries. And I'm like, can I have like my maraschino cherry, please? Yeah. I want my maraschino cherry. Call me old fashioned, boom, boom. But I want my maraschino cherry.
Yeah, I'm trying to think the bitters. Peychaud's bitters. Okay, he's an important part of the story. I mean, not this right here, but in terms of other cocktails, the development of the bitters.
Mm-hmm.
And he was from, we're from Haiti, I believe, and then or that island. But he lived in New Orleans and established New Orleans.
He's a pharmacist, and he created the bitters, and that's an essential part of the Sazerac story, and he's credited there's some sources credit him as origin of the man who originated or origin of cocktails, which isn't so. There's an older version of cocktails came around a lot earlier. That who originated cocktails is another there's multiple theories about that. But
one story is that he had a little cup that he used for a pharmacist that he used to mix things a little cup.
Yeah.
But he also used it in making drinks, so it's like a coquette, so it's like a cocktail.
I mean, who knows? I mean, they theorize, I think one of the theories is that earlier than obviously Mr. Peychaud, that they used to, two theories was like, that when the end of the barrels came down, when the barrels got low with the alcohol, they called it the tailings. Uh-huh. And so the thing that, poured, the liquor out, they called the cock. So cocktailings, so you're having the cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other one was that when they were selling horses, they would put something to push the horse, and the tail would look all nice and fancy. So for some reason they associated that with the cocktail making people Anyway.
The Sazerac Company is doing just really major things in the whole world of drinks and cocktails. They own a lot of titles now that including Peychaud's bitters. I mean, they're the ones that make Peychaud's bitters. And so it used to be that it was the Sazerac liqueur and one thing, and the other shelf is Peychaud. They were all from different places, and now they're all
gone. Yeah.
But I'm glad that they provide security for those kind of things too. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I think it's sad when those older liqueurs and items. Die away. I mean, the cocktail resurgence, you've all these other people making bitters, but at least Peychaud's is still around. I mean, you probably know better than I do. Ohan, which was a anise flavored liqueur that was a favorite to drink during carnival season in New Orleans. I think that ceased operation. It was made in Spain like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And I don't know if they started it again, but it's not the same. But again, that's another thing that died away because there's no interest.
Ohan was made,
except for the ones.
Yeah, it was made in a factory in Spain. Here it is in Spain, okay? And the biggest part of its market was in New Orleans, okay?
Yeah.
And probably of New Orleans, the biggest part of its market was probably the Garden District, okay?
Yeah.
Because the game, it was really popular. It was really popular with the Rex crowd, okay?
Yes.
And with Ohan, it's a anise flavored drink, and sometimes they put a little something in it. I don't know, soda water or something. And it's it's popular. And then several years ago, they announced they were closing. And some people from New Orleans went and essentially, I don't know if they bought but they bought the inventory.
Yeah.
And one of them was the guy from Martin's Wine Cellars.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy, I know, is a guy named Bolton O'Reilly, who was a former Rex on that. Anyway, so they bought the supply, and I guess the name, and the supply, I think, just recently ran out, but in the process, Sazerac started making it.
Okay. All right. I figured you
And they use a similar label, just like, because they own the right to it. And so the O'Hen survives because of Sazerac buying that. I mean, that's an example.
Okay. All right.
That's the kind of thing it's doing. So.
Okay. I did not know that. I learned something new today. I love it.
And as far as I know, it tastes
the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of any flavored liquors, but.
Yeah. Okay, well, I got me going here. This one follow-up story, and then we're doing one up. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The proper O'Hen cocktail. Okay, you got the O'Hen liquor, and then the other thing you put in it. And then it's important that you use really fine ground ice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, many years ago, I was doing a story about O'Hen, and Walton Riley, who was one of the people who bought all this, I went to talk to him about it. He said, well, are we making O'Hen? So, yeah, okay. And so he's doing the thing against the ice. Well, this is a rich guy who lives uptown. He doesn't have an ice grinder. Okay.
Yeah.
So he pulls out this cloth and he puts the ice there and he pulls it over. He's got a hammer.
Yeah.
And he starts pounding the ice. Okay. And all of a sudden he's got this fine ice. Okay. That he puts in the O'Hen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and he shows me a piece of cloth. I said, well, where's this cloth? He says, oh, this is a piece of awning that Mr. Foster gave me. So he was using some of Foster awning that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, to pound his ice in.
Ah, I love it. These connections, always connections with New Orleans. There's no degrees of separation in New Orleans, as people find out.
If only we could connect it all to a cure for cancer, we'd be in
good shape. Exactly.
Okay. Well, Phil, thank you very much. It's been very informative.
Yeah, no. It's been a blast to talk to you.
Yeah. We do have coffee service here, but it does not serve Cafe Boulot. Yes, so we're not quite there, so I can't offer. So good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
And thank you all. Thanks to Kelly at the controls. Thank you all for joining us. Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.